Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily life. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, hello, I'm Ruth. It's great to have you here. This is A Quiet Life. This is episode 19. As I record this, it's Wednesday, the 27th of February. And today's guest is Gerald. Gerald, I have known since primary school, but not really. Like, we haven't stayed close since primary school. You'll hear that in the interview. It's great to talk with him. I heard him, as I said last week at the end, I heard him tell me a story about pirates. I heard that he was attacked by pirates in Papua New Guinea. And so I had to talk to him about that. But he's a bit put out because he doesn't actually want us to focus on the pirates in Papua New Guinea for very good reason. And I just have to admit, it's my immaturity that makes pirates sound so interesting. Anyway, he has fabulous stories about his travels and about taking family on travel, and it's I think it's a fantastic interview. So you might hear from my voice, it's a bit deeper, it's a bit more bassy than usual, because I overdid it and I got sick. So that's this week in my life. I went to Canberra, I turned up at the hotel room, got up the next morning and honestly felt like I was on holidays. I was there in a room by myself. Nobody cared what I did until my meeting with my friend a bit later, and I enjoyed that feeling a lot. I had breakfast at the local cafe. It was quite a good cafe. Put up breakfast pictures on Facebook. I met up with some old friends, dear long-standing friends. We're not that old, just long-standing friends. Had some great conversations. Had a beautiful time with my daughter. It was just so good to catch up and hear all her stories. And, you know, one day I'm going to interview her about her time in Panama or any of the amazing things she does, actually. She's quite an incredible person. She went to World Youth Day in Panama. It was just a fascinating time, just that clash of cultures and what you get when you get 170,000 people all pouring into a country to be together. And she said one thing that was pretty amazing. They had the pilgrimage to see the Pope and everything. They all had to walk for 16 kilometers or something. They went up there, they found a place to sleep and they stayed overnight. And then on the way back, they're walking back and they're trying to find buses. Of course, all the buses are absolutely chock-a-block full of people. People sitting on the luggage racks up top. People just squashed up. You couldn't get off. You couldn't get on. You just squashed up against each other and you stayed that way. But she said even at that point, everyone was still singing and just, you know, being together in a positive way, because they'd all been there for this pilgrimage, for God, really. You know, the Pope as well, but God, really. So, that was great, a great experience for her. So there's too many stories, I'm not going to keep talking about that. But yes, we came, so on the Friday night, for some reason I didn't sleep. That was when Moz and Caleb arrived at the motel room and I just didn't sleep very well. And then Saturday night was the wedding, and the wedding, you know, it was lovely. Mel and Pete, yeah, I pray for you all God's many blessings on your lives together. The people were so great. I danced a lot, enjoyed meeting these new people, but Moz was saying, yeah, I can understand why people move to Canberra. These people are great. They were just really fun people. We had awesome time, really good conversations and fun dancing and good food and beautiful bride and groom, and the speeches were hilarious. I've never seen anyone bring out a laminated graph of relative heights of the groom and his best man, who was his older brother. But the groom's quite a tall man, and the older brother had a graph to show at what point in time Peter's height outstripped his own. Oh, gee, it was funny. Anyway, good speeches. good time, good wedding, late night. And I don't do late very well. And then on Sunday, we got up and had a really lovely brunch with Jess again. And then our flights were delayed. And they were delayed. And then we missed a flight. And then we were put on another flight, which was also delayed. And then it was even delayed once we got on that final flight. They said, oh, we just need to wait here for 10 minutes while they fix something. We were beyond caring at that point what they were fixing. We just wanted to get home. So I think we got home about 11:30 p.m. on Sunday night. On Monday, I got up and just tried to do the normal thing. And on Monday night, we went out to tea with people. So that was a long-standing invitation. And I enjoyed the dinner. It was really fun. But once again, it went past pumpkin time. And so for the last 2 days, I've just had the dripping nose and the scratchy throat. And this podcast is late going up today because I went back to bed and I slept for 2 hours this morning. So I'm feeling well enough to chat to you today, and I'm sure I'm getting better. But hasn't been awesome. I just can't do it. So that's life, isn't it? We need to find our limits and work within them, I guess. And I'll try and work within them for the next few days, because the weekend coming up isn't small either. But fun. And I'll tell you one thing about the week that's coming up is that on Sunday afternoon, there is an author called Solari Gentile coming to Tasmania, and she writes murder mysteries. And I write murder mysteries, so I'm going to high tea with her, and I'm really looking forward to that. So anyway, there are more things coming up as well. My family does Boxing Day in February or March because we're just too busy over Christmas, so we're getting together on Boxing Day for a family do as well. So, you know, it's fun. Who knew that February and March were the busiest times of the year? But apparently they are. So I will chat with you more next week, but I'll tell you, I don't think that Gerald would have found this week difficult at all, because he's just such an active person and a traveller, and he has some great stories about his travels. And the other thing I loved about Gerald was his family, so important to him. His kids are so important. So I hope you really enjoy this interview, and I will chat to you again next week. Welcome everyone. Today we want to welcome Gerald on the show. Exciting. I have known Gerald since a long time, since we were in primary school together. But I left primary school at the end of grade 5, and I think we just completely lost touch then. We probably weren't ever actually really close friends in primary school, it has to be said. And then it was really nice because Gerald and Sarah and their 4 kids turned up at my church, and that was very cool. And we reconnected, and I thought, yeah, it'd be nice to chat to you today. Gerald preaches to us sometimes at church. Very well, has to be said. And but he's not a paid pastor, but he's a follower of Jesus like me. And so it's very good to have you here on the show, Gerald.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we start where we always start. How did you become a Christian?
There's a bit of a story, but it's quite simple, really. typical story, very familiar one to a lot of people. I grew up in a Christian household, and my parents were pretty strict, and they taught us well. There was just very good Bible teaching, and really conservative church twice on Sundays. Know without excuse.
Yeah. Wow.
So I had my parents' faith.
Yeah.
Up until the time I was about 18, and when I was 18, I took off overseas for a year as an exchange student to Sweden.
Right.
And I landed with a family who were new atheists. About as
different as you could get.
Opposite poles from my parents.
Yeah,
wow. It was, you know, Christianity is a farce, it's a crutch, it's a load of rubbish, science has the answer for everything, your religion, you know, miracles don't exist. Coming from that ultra-conservative background where nothing was ever questioned, you didn't have to test your faith in any way, to that, I had to make a choice.
Mm.
And I was there for 12 months. I went to church three times in that time and got to the end of it and I'd seen both sides
mm-hmm.
and just knew how where I wanted to go. I thought, absolutely, I want to follow Jesus. So
yeah. Wow.
That was a big thing for me. And God, he didn't leave me completely alone. It turned out there was another exchange student just down the road, Australian, who was a totally on fire, charismatic Christian.
Mm.
And I believe he's actually a Sydney Anglican pastor now.
Yeah.
And he really encouraged me while I was there. And I also had a couple of guys in my class, and this is a school of about 1,000, who mostly there were no Christians,
mm-hmm.
and they just happened to have been missionaries or from missionary families as well. So, yeah, God had a way just to throw me in the deep end, but also provide some levels of encouragement.
I mean, know the school that we went through, the little Christian school here, getting to a school that first is that size and then there's no Christians in there anywhere, that would have just been, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah, and there is no Christian worldview anywhere at all, wherever you go. And church over there, it's mostly government run. So most Christians or most people are members of the church, but it's about being hatched, matched and dispatched, as you call it. And there are a few free churches, and I went to one free church service and during my whole time there. But
What did you think that God had that the new atheism didn't have?
Hope, I think, and purpose. It's a theme that keeps coming up for me. I'm quite sceptical, and I suspect that actually going there for a year and being challenged by my host father and host parents actually put me in a place where I do question everything. Mm. And what I find is whenever I question the world, if I remove God, if I walk away from that, it's pretty dark.
Mm.
And for me, I think that was one of the key things. I saw that side and thought, There's no hope. It's just darkness. I didn't want to go there. For me, I like how Christianity answers all the questions, the who, where, what, how, why. Science does a great job, I think, of answering the what and the why and the how, but and even the when, perhaps. But the who and why, they don't answer very well, but the who and the why, I think Christianity answers them all extremely well. And so for me, that kind of thing's important. I need to actually see the reason behind it.
Mm. Yeah, nice. So what do you do for a job?
I'm an electronics engineer.
Okay.
Mm.
See, this is how much we've lost touch. electronics engineer is like maths and problem solving. And
That's my job. That's what I do. I actually run a small company and we manufacture a lot of bespoke electronic equipment.
Nice.
And specialise in underwater equipment as well. So we manufacture underwater video cameras, video transmission systems for fish farms, data loggers, measuring tools. If you can't buy it from BW, we'll make it for you. You just pay a premium.
Yeah.
So that's what we do. Yeah.
That's what bespoke means.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It will work. It'll do the job you want. You just got to pay for it. So how does your faith then show itself? I think generally people don't think of engineers as being particularly woo-woo kind of people, I guess. So yeah, how does your faith show itself in your workplace?
That's a tough one, and I often ponder that question. I've had it's a bit like the ultra-conservative upbringing in my childhood, school and church. I've always worked with believers.
Mm.
My business partners have always been Christians. And so my work environment has always been a Christian environment.
Mm.
So it really is about how I relate to my clients, the language, the way I speak. And many people would say, well, you're just a good human. But I tend to think more about the person I would be if I weren't a Christian.
Mm.
And I think the dangerous thing is we very often, and rightly so, we compare ourselves with Jesus and we go, well, we really fall short.
Mm.
True. But I try as much as possible to compare myself with the person I was yesterday or the person I was last year or the person that I would be if I weren't a believer.
Mm.
To me, that's really important.
Mm.
Because everybody is at a different point in their faith. And yes, we should be striving to grow and we should be encouraged to grow and work on that. But
That's why you can't judge anybody, right? Because you don't actually know who they were yesterday. Exactly. So they may be most irritating person you know, but they have improved.
We still have to make judgments. Have to make judgments, but exactly that, you know. How can we see people for not who they are, but who they can necessarily, but who they can be in Christ if they're not a believer, and what they can become if they continue on in their faith and grow. So for me, it is very much a practical. How am I proclaiming Christ? If you go out on a fish farm, the language is very colourful, and I want them to see that I'm not participating in that kind of life. I want them to see something different, something unique, something that they like. The way that I treat my family, the way that I speak about my wife, the time that I spend with my kids, all those sorts of things I think are really important.
Shining lights. So you've travelled a fair bit lately. Do you want to tell us? So I've written down India and PNG and anywhere else that you want to talk about. So some of these moments. Now, I've said before about travels to India that we can't really talk about, or definitely not name, but talk about the people over there. But just, how that's affected you and why you take your kids.
It's an easy one with kids. Well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I love being with my kids and I love to travel with them and they love it. And why would I leave them behind?
People would say, and I'm totally actually 100% on your side, but people would say disease and, poverty and filth and...
Well, safety is a myth. And that's... Well, we live in a culture of safetyism now. And it's... It's gotten to the point now where people have actually, I think, not thought about whether being too safe is actually dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is. To start right at the beginning, the reason we bring our kids along, Sarah and I, when we only had three kids, travelled to, just went on a holiday, had some frequent flyer points I needed to use. So we thought, where can we get as far as we can? And we made it to Esrock, to Uluru.
Yeah.
So we spent a week there looking at Uluru and Kings Canyon and Alice Springs. And we both thought, we have to bring our children here. We have to show our children this. We have to show them Australia. We have to show them something in the world. And so while we were there, we found out we were pregnant with our fourth. And we actually looked at the dates and thought, which year are we going to pick?
Excellent.
And we picked 2012. Ended up being 2013. We took our kids for 4 months travelling.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been a catalyst, I think, that's set us off on the whole travel mindset and camping and exploring and trying different things. And so now it's just natural if we're going to do another trip somewhere.
You all do it.
Yeah, we all or some.
Oh, cool. So India, how did that change your life?
That's in so many ways. Tasmanians or Tasmania, we are at the bottom end of the world, and it's very easy just to live a nice, comfortable, little, relaxed life. And why not? But just to see the contrast, I think, was the big thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
The contrast of how people live and the reality of life for millions of people. It just really put in stark contrast the way we live here. And interestingly, we went to India for 2 weeks after we went to Sweden for 3 weeks on our way back from Sweden. So we just had this beautiful holiday in Scandinavia. And then we went to India. Oh, the contrast was remarkable. And then within all of that chaos, within all of that pain and suffering, to see some of the work that's going on to bring hope to people and that beacon of light and how powerful it shines within that and the impact that it can have, it's still resonates now with us and even with our kids. Different outlook on life.
So do you feel survivor guilt, or how do you deal with the fact that you come back and life is comfortable?
Oh, yeah, I felt that very strongly. And I've told people this story before. The first day we were there, we'd been out for lunch and I was getting back in the car and this beautiful little girl, white dress, standing next to me, tapping me on the leg with her hand. What do I do with that? And I think what it did was totally crush my sense of self-sufficiency. I've done pretty well for myself. I take personal responsibility is very high on my list of things that people should aim for, and I take that on myself. But in that situation, I had absolutely no control, and I couldn't fix the situation. I couldn't solve it. I couldn't do anything. Even if I handed her a coin, I didn't know whether it was going to go to her or whoever she was with, or that completely rocked me. So I think being back here, it's opened up. Kept my eyes open to what's going on, trying to seek those opportunities. Look, there are lonely people over there, there are people suffering, but there's plenty of people suffering right here. In Kingston, there are tons of lonely people, and you just have to go and look for them. And also, it's helped our family to be generous in giving financially and also praying. We actually pray for India once a week. We eat Indian every Monday night and pray for India. Nice. And we've done that since we've got home. And that's all Sarah, that's my wife.
Yeah.
She's the one who drives that.
Yeah, that's a really nice way of doing it, though. It's a family, family get-together thing. It's shared food, but then it's keeping the focus back and bringing that reminder. And
imagine trying to do that if Sarah and I went without the kids.
Yeah. It wouldn't have that depth of meaning.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you found that the kids have a focus that has changed since? Oh,
absolutely. Yeah, even if you question them about what they want to do in life and direction they want to take, and being involved in gospel ministry somewhere is up there for all of them. So it's amazing to see.
The school has had some mission trips to Fiji, and Moz has told the kids, I hate to tell you this, but I've just wrecked your holidays from here on in. You're never going to be satisfied with the resort living anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to go behind the scenes and see what it's actually like. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do something.
Mm.
Do something.
Yeah.
Cool. And PNG. So what took you to PNG?
Beginning of 2017, I said to Sarah, I think we just need a year off. No travelling this year. We're just going to...
Okay. You know,
anyway, so shortly after that, I get a phone call from a guy that we met when we were travelling around Australia, who we got on really well with. And he said he was taking his 13-year-old daughter on an island hopping tour around Milne Bay in Papua New Guinea, and would I like to tag along with one of my kids? So I said yes, naturally.
Of course.
And we had our first night booked, so we flew into Awatau in Milne Bay. We had our first night booked in a guest house on Normanby Island, part of the Don Castro group of islands, the same guy who named a Bruni in the Don Castro channel. And our host there at that guest house was really intrigued by what we were doing, and he organised a boat for us and a guide, and he asked if he could tag along. Wow. So we spent 14 days just hopping around islands, some uninhabited. We went to islands that had never had tourists visit, and they hosted us, looked after us. So it's all just bark huts and tents and no one else apart from locals.
Yeah. But the guide would have been very useful, I'm assuming, with language and...
No, well, they all speak English really well, yeah.
Even
English,
in the bark huts.
Absolutely. They're quite well educated, and all education over there, all schooling is in English.
Right.
It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. So I came back from that trip with Isabella, so we went together, and that was wonderful. That was to spend that one-on-one time with her. That was brilliant. And then I thought, oh, well, I've got to take my boys. I better take them along for a trip. So the year after, the following year, this year in October, I went again, and I took a friend from Melbourne with his two boys. And we aimed to do a similar loop. We didn't quite get to go to all the islands we wanted to. We had a bit of drama, but...
Yeah, we're coming to that. I just want to break and say, if you can hear rattling, it's because our little friend's little boy is playing with his engine down in the driveway, and it's going rattle, rattle, rattle down the driveway. So you didn't quite get as far as you wanted to go.
No. The weather wasn't quite as good as we'd hoped, so we got stuck on an island for a few nights. And then we left there and went to an island called Nuakata Island, which is close to the mainland. And there's a bit of a backstory. We unfortunately went during sea cucumber season.
Yes.
The locals call beach steamer. and it opens every 5 to 7 years. And
So it's really not like the time of the year or anything.
It was just unlucky.
Yeah.
And these sea cucumbers are highly valuable, and every single person over there who has a boat and can hold their breath is diving for them. And the market is predominantly Chinese, and there are Chinese buyers wandering around with anything up to $500,000 cash.
Mm.
And so that is just a magnet for rascals.
Mm.
And unfortunately, there were sea pirates wandering around in boats or cruising around looking for these buyers, and they'd received a tip-off that we were buyers and we were on this island.
Yeah.
So they came into our camp, and I was quite lucky. I got off quite lightly. We'd been out all day. We'd been fishing and diving, and we'd just been to the local school visiting them, and we came back. I had a quick dip. Quick swim, and there were two boats a few hundred metres offshore, and I didn't think twice, didn't think much of it. And then Daniel, my son, and I got out and went around behind the trees to the well to have a freshwater wash, and then all of a sudden my son Joel was sprinting past me going, "Dad, run!" And I said, "Oh, shall I get my camera? Have you seen something?" And he said, "No, Dad, run!" "Oh, okay, run." So we took off, and I had Rod's son with me as well, so mm-hmm. I was with three boys, and I had one of the locals with me. And so we ran quite a few hundred metres away mm. down around the island and waited.
Mm.
And it turns out there were 10 fully armed pirates, the two boats up the beach. My mate Rod had a gun to his back, "Give us the cash, show us the cash." And our guide and Rod were able to convince them that we were tourists and not buyers. And when they found out, they let us go and they gave our stuff back. All they took was our boat motor and our fuel.
Wow.
So.
that's quite amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can just so easily see that turning.
Yeah, all kinds of could ways. Could have been a tragedy, but it's not a cool story.
It's just a cool story.
Yeah. But at the same time, it seems to be the story that dominates the trip. And that was 10 minutes of the trip, you know.
Mm.
The rest, there's so much more. Diving with manta rays and fishing and swimming in these pristine waters, coral reefs, and you could go all day on an island under the coconut palms and eating fresh fish on the fire and savoury bananas and not see a single other person. Middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Absolutely spectacular. And the country, the people there, they've got so much to offer and they desperately want to build these ecotourism ventures. But there's just a few rascals running around. And so they're learning about how to avoid them and which routes to take to try and miss them.
Mm.
But, it's a real tragedy when that kind of thing happens because...
It builds a picture in our head that's not
which is not actually right. There's so much more to offer. And to be honest, I'd quite happily go back again. It wouldn't bother me to go back.
Mm.
But I'd just choose a different path, different route.
Mm.
Yeah.
So... You would suggest that everybody who possibly can should get out of Australia and do at least some sort of travel.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think for our family, I know travelling around Australia for 4 months, just a half loop,
mm-hmm.
was probably the single best thing we did as a family in terms of building our family,
mm-hmm.
growing it. You can't live in a tent with six people. Well, it was a camper trailer, so a trailer tent for 4 months and not have to deal with issues and conflict and learn how to work through those things in a positive way. You can't do that for 4 months without doing that.
And if you can't travel, do you have a next best option?
Look, there's so much to see in Tasmania.
Mm.
You can explore for months and still not see it all.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of things you can do. It's just about having, I think, quantity time together. Exploring, seeing something different, being involved in something. Even I'm sure there are projects you can get involved in that people are doing overseas, learn about it, sponsor children, all sorts of things you can get involved in.
Yeah.
I understand that it's not everyone's able to travel, but and we've made a lot of sacrifices to be able to do it.
Mm.
It's not like it's come easy.
Yeah, but it feels to me like half of it's about seeing the new, taking yourself out of your comfort zone, seeing whatever, and half of it's about building that relationship as a family and making sure you're spending that quality time together, quantity time together, so that you bond together as a family as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, both of those things.
Yeah. Awesome. Mm. Awesome. Okay. Final couple of questions that I always ask everyone. And I didn't realise how hard this next question was until I started looking at answering one, doing a podcast by myself and answering the questions myself. So when do you feel close to God or closest to God?
I'm just going to throw a spanner in the works. I don't actually spend a lot of time worrying about whether I feel close to God because how I feel about God's closeness has very little to do whether he is or not.
Yeah.
And if I'm constantly chasing whether I feel close to God, then I think that's a terrible place to be. If my sense of being is somehow tied to that, I don't. So I don't. I try and focus on what I know of God. And that's pretty clear in his word. And I see it in creation. And I've experienced that in our travels and through trials. For me, it's focusing on what I know. And I think I spoke earlier about being overseas as an exchange student and seeing the darkness that's not there. I guess I hold on to those hopes.
Yeah. Do you do a daily devotion or daily?
Not really.
Yeah. You just live it.
I try and live it. Yeah. One thing we do as a family is we, as much as possible, have meals together. Mm. So dinner and breakfast, if I'm not staying work early. And we read the Bible together. That's what we do during those times. So is the Bible read? Yes, every day.
Yeah.
A specific devotion?
No. Yeah, cool. That's good.
Yeah.
It's good. I like having different pictures of what different people do because I think that a lot of people do different things and there is no one right way to do this because it's a relationship with God. Yeah. So what's something about God or Christianity that you wish everybody knew?
That same word, hope. Hope and purpose. Being an engineer, the answer to the questions, who, when, why, how, where, who, when, why, how, what. There is an answer. You may be looking for it somewhere else, but, hey, it's over here.
Just need to do the right digging.
You just need to do the right digging. And sometimes for a lot of people that means wandering aimlessly for years and you need to explore all the other options. For some people that's where it is.
Fantastic. Okay. Mm. Well, thank you very, very much for talking with us.
It's all right.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope this has been encouraging for you. I want to especially thank Catherine Joy Music for the theme music. If you would like to help me fund this podcast, you can find me at patreon.com/quietlife and help me out for as little as $1 a month. If you want to contact me, you can email Ruth at ruthamos.com.au or find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author or tweet me at A Quiet Life. I'd love to hear from you. God bless. See you next week.